It's good to have everybody here for today's Political Rewind. Friday, we're getting set for a big weekend. And boy, after the kind of news we've all been dealing with, both the intensity of the news, the sadness of the news, we all need some kind of break. Wouldn't you agree, Jim?
Yeah, Galloway? I would. Producer Tom Faust is already on it. He is in the control room with his green shirt on, laughing hysterically.
Ready for the weekend. It's... I want to say this is an exciting weekend for a lot of reasons. Number one, Atlanta United is back in action. They play New York in the Arthur Blank Mercedes-Benz Sports Palace on Sunday afternoon. I'm taking my family down there. But just as important, Galloway, today the Premier League kicks off its brand new season. Liverpool is playing in the first match of the season. It starts right after our show is over. I mean, it'll be 7 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night in England, but they're playing on NBC Sports at 3.
Oh, how exciting.
Oh, come on. That's Jim Galloway. He, of course, is the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You read him on Wednesdays and Sundays in the newspaper, and he oversees the Political Insider blog at AJC.com. Leo Smith, Republican strategist. I think fair to say, lately, Leo, Republican troublemaker. We'll talk a little bit about how things have settled down for you since you were mildly critical of some of President Trump's comments about race. And we'll get to that a little later in the show. And I'm really pleased to welcome back, after far too long an absence, Professor Audrey Haynes, political science professor at the University of Georgia in Athens. Audrey, it really is great to have you back. We've missed you a lot.
Well, I've missed the show, and I've missed you, Bill.
Yeah. You start class next week?
Next week. Oh. Classes start on the 14th, and we are ready to go. I think the number of accidents has already increased in Athens, starting yesterday.
What are you teaching this semester?
This semester, I'm teaching Intro to Applied Politics and a giant section of Introduction to American Government.
Oh, okay. So a lot. We should point out you do run the Applied Politics program there, which trains young people who are interested in political careers in how to pursue, in preparing themselves to go out and pursue them.
Right, to join the political industrial complex.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
But hopefully with a lot of training in ethics and political science and all kinds of things that will make them better political leaders and ethical practitioners.
Well, good luck when classes start next week. Cesar Mitchell, former president of the Atlanta City Council, candidate for mayor a couple of years ago, now an attorney, is on his way here. He sent us a note that he's making his way in from Gwinnett County, which can be sometimes really difficult, but Cesar will be here, and we're looking forward to seeing him. We'll just bring him in as soon as he arrives. A couple of news stories that I want to update you on. First, a national story. You know, we've all seen that the El Paso shooter, Patrick Crucius, published a manifesto on 8chan in which made it clear that he was going to go to El Paso, or made it clear that Mexicans were going to be a target of his in some form or another. But the Washington Post has just moved a story. I'll read you the lead. The suspect accused of killing 22 people at an El Paso Walmart last week told authorities that he was targeting Mexicans and confessed to carrying out the shooting rampage when he surrendered to authorities. That comes from police reports. So, Jim, I think it's the first time we've had a first-person acknowledgement by the alleged shooter himself that, yes, indeed, he was targeting Mexicans.
Right, right. This was verbal communication and not some suspicious posting.
We're going to, in a little while, talk about how all this is playing out throughout the week on the federal level in Congress and in the White House. But let's turn first to what's going on in the state. There's another breaking story there. A group of civil rights nonprofits got together at the Capitol today and held a news conference. GALEO, the Georgia Association of Latin Elected Officials, the Anti-Defamation League, and a couple of others held a news conference to urge legislators to finally pass hate crimes law, a hate crimes law in Georgia. Here, Stephen Fowler of GPB Radio News was down there. He quotes Jerry Gonzalez from Galeo as saying, Georgia should not be one of only five states that does not have hate crimes legislation. It's a shame and a travesty that still to this day, Georgia is one of the five states that doesn't have that legislation and it should change. And then he talks about El Paso as a heinous crime of violence, a purposeful hate crime. And of course, Jim, one of the things that's been pointed out is that, God forbid, if there were a shooting like this that targeted a specific religious group, ethnic group, racial group in Georgia, while the person could be prosecuted, there's no hate crime statute to prosecute
under state prosecution, there would be no, the prosecutors would not be able to ask for extra time or extra punishment. Because of the targeting, it would be different, of course, if federal prosecutors.
Exactly.
And isn't the case, just like so many other times, that Georgia tends to lean on the side of, if there's already a federal law, then what's the point in having a state localized law, because the federal law would override the whole thing anyway.
Well, Chuck F. Strachan, the Republican from Northern Suburbs, came close. He introduced a bill, Jim.
And it's still alive
for the 2020 session. But one of the concerns, Jim, is, as you know, that we've dealt with on this for a long time, is that the reason that in the past the legislature has refused to act on this is they were willing to create a hate crimes law that was about religious groups, about racial groups. They did not want to acknowledge that it was that a hate crimes bill that protected gays and lesbians should be put into law here.
And this bill by Chuck F. Strachan does
yep.
that.
Yep.
It wouldn't surprise me to see some pressure put on the Senate to move that thing.
Yeah, that's the stopping.
And I will tell you what, if you are a Republican in Georgia, you are looking at the suburbs, you're saying that may not be a bad idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're going to talk about that today, that's for sure. Cesar Mitchell, you made it.
Yeah.
Stuck on I-85 coming in from Gwinnett?
Yeah, I should have taken a scooter. I don't know why I did.
You'd have to do that before what?
Yeah, as long
p.m.
as it's before 9 p.m.
Before 9 p.m.
Thank you for coming in.
No,
it's good to have you here. I already introduced you, and I'm glad you've arrived really at the beginning of the show.
All right, thank you. It's great to be here. Good to see everyone.
So, Jim, let's open this up for conversation, but you start this off. Instead of starting with federal legislation that's being talked about and that sort of thing, let's go right to Georgia. Galeo and ADL and the other organizations basically positioned us to do that. And so did Sam Olens, who the former Attorney General of Georgia, a frequent panelist on this show. Sam was on Dennis O'Hare's political podcast show this morning
over at
our friends at WABE. And he said something surprising in some ways for a former conservative Republican attorney general.
Right. He made two points. He said that a red flag law would be a state responsibility, and it can be drawn up as long as it's drawn up carefully and gives this is a law that would permit a judge to order weapons seized from a person judged to be about to do himself or others harm. He said, you know, if you give that person enough access in court to challenge that decision, and we could pass that legislation. But he also singled out a very odd bill that we've had in Georgia, and that is if you are involuntarily committed to a hospital for mental reasons, that after 5 years your name is purged from a list that keeps you from owning having a concealed weapons permit. And he said that's ridiculous. That's the word he used.
He called it, quote, dangerous to society and dangerous to law enforcement in talking about just that, what a ridiculous law it is. That law, Cesar, we were kind of trying to find it. Maybe one of our listeners, because we have a lot of people in the legislature who listen, will remember when that law was passed. But it never made a lot of sense to many, many people, because it allows those who might be dangerous with a weapon to become invisible.
Oh, absolutely. And so I really applaud Attorney General Sam Olens for bringing the issue up, and certainly bringing the issue up when maybe it's not that popular from his quarters to do that.
Audrey, we need a way. I want to get you to weigh in on this as well. Because, and in fact, let me set this up. And Jim, well, all of you can help me with this. As we talk about Georgia and how Georgians have reacted, political leaders have reacted to gun laws, I think it's interesting to go back and take a quick look at history. Mm-hmm. So go back to the election of Roy Barnes, governor, the Democratic governor, 1998. Roy Barnes was proudly showing off his endorsement by the National Rifle Association, right, when he ran
right,
for governor.
Right, right, and I'll take you 4 years before that. Zell Miller writes about the same time, Zell Miller writes an op-ed piece chastising Democrats for becoming the book was A National Party No More.
Yeah.
And he chastised them for challenging the NRA on gun positions.
So that happens. Mark Taylor, another Democrat, former lieutenant governor, runs. Mark Taylor, too, proudly says, I'm a member of the IRA, glad to be there.
NRA.
I mean, yes. NRA. Jason Carter, much more recently, running against Nathan Deal in 2014, votes for and gets severely criticized, Audrey, for supporting a bill which became known by critics as guns everywhere legislation, called himself essentially a pro-gun Democrat. But my point being, Democrats have had a proud history of running as pro-gun advocates in this state.
And then just last year, you have Stacey Evans running for in the Democratic primary. She gets a D from the NRA, and she is drilled on by Stacey Evans in the primary because Stacey Abrams got an F, and she's bragging about that F.
Yeah, yeah. So suddenly everything turns, Audrey.
Well, let me just put it in a longer historical perspective, because we have about 20 years of data on the public's attitudes towards gun rights versus gun control. And what you do see is you see some gaps between different groups. Women, for example, have a large gap in support for gun rights than men. Mostly men are gun owners and so on. But what we have seen is, in terms of gun rights over the last 20 years, that number has increased. We might see a dip after a shooting, but then it just crawls back upwards. And then in terms of gun control, actually we've seen that decrease over the last 20 years, support for gun control. So politicians are responding to what they believe is necessary in order to win that group. But there is also a gap in the suburban vote. You know, the rural vote is the strongest in support of gun rights. Suburbans less so. Urbans much less so. So depending on where you're at, your audience may be a little bit different, and they do respond to that. I'll mention presidential candidates, too. Remember when John Kerry was pictured carrying a gun in a sporting outfit? So there's that. There's this great belief in support of gun rights. But at the same time, you know, the framing has changed. It's about gun violence now. It's not about taking away your right to a gun. It's about how do we limit gun violence. And I think that there's some movement on the Republican Party now, because a lot of their targeted voters that they need, and those suburban women, women of color as well, potentially, you know, they're trying to get those individuals there.
That may be happening in Congress, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But, Leo, so far we've had nothing but silence from Republican leaders in this state. The governor has said, well, I'm looking at it. I'm weighing what we might want to do. The Speaker of the House has said he's really backed away from this strongly. So, you know, Democrats have moved into this anti-gun position increasingly, and yet Republicans still have to stand up and say, yes, we were the ones who, over the last number of sessions, expanded where guns can be carried to the point where you can carry a gun almost anywhere. a governor who believes that basically you can carry a gun without a permit anywhere. So Republicans have either got to stand strong for those positions to get the support of their very conservative base, or start figuring out within the state what to do next.
Well, I'm appreciating the professorial sort of analysis of the difference between gun rights and gun and ish, concern about gun rights and gun violence, because I think that's where the Republicans are going to receive their help. Any type of cover that Republicans get from an electioneering point of view will be packaged in the framework of, we're against gun violence against human beings. We're against gun violence. And that kind of puts it in the right perspective. How do we decrease the violence as opposed to how do we decrease gun rights? Republicans will never be against gun rights.
Well, again, I want to differentiate between what's happening in Washington and what's happening in the state. Caesar, I sort of thought the other day that when President Trump stood out there by the helicopter before going to El Paso and Dayton and said that he did think we should have some sort of background checks, that and he's gone a little bit further since then, I did think that he, under the best circumstances, he could start providing cover, not just for Republicans on the Hill, but for Republicans here in the state of Georgia who are so strongly aligned with him. That didn't really happen. It happened a bit on the Hill. It didn't happen here in Georgia at all, to the best of my knowledge.
No, I think there still is a strong divide and a strong chasm. I think, the framing issue, I think that's the really big issue. Framing. How are we framing this issue up? I mean, gun violence versus gun safety, anti-gun versus gun safety. And really, what do these terms implicate in terms of action? I was a bit surprised to hear the president talk about background checks, but you're talking about, saying this in the wake of two horrible tragedies. Yeah. So he had to say something. But I still think it's going to go back. Everyone's going to go back into their corners, and you're going to have this debate over nomenclature, and then this debate that's going to roil around whether or not we should act or not. I really think, quite frankly, from a Democratic perspective, that we've got to not use the term anti-gun. We've got to talk about gun safety and reducing gun violence. Leo, you seem to imply that, if we talk about reducing gun violence and we may get Republicans to move, there's a part of me that thinks that there'll still be some resistance to moving anywhere.
So let me chime in with some polling data that Pew picked up. They did a great piece in 2017. And let me tell you what the low-hanging fruit is, where we generally have agreement. And this is national survey. One, preventing mentally ill people from purchasing guns. Number one agreement, high 80% support. Background checks for private sales at gun shows. And that's that gun show loophole. Within people who own guns and people who don't own guns, with people who are Democrats, with people who are Republicans, those two things have a supermajority of support. And finally, barring gun purchase by people on no-fly or watch lists. Now, remember, during the first 2 years of Trump's administration, there was that point where they tried to get this passed,
right,
even to the point where the Democrats were having a sit-in. I called my member of Congress and talked to them and said, if they can't fly because we're so worried they might, be a terrorist, maybe we shouldn't let them have a gun. And I was told that I was violating someone's constitutional rights. So I think that there may be somewhat of a shift.
Let me ask you: where does the Pew polling show any possibility of movement with the super large magazines that some of these rifles and shotguns?
That's number five. That's number five. So 44% of gun owners support banning high capacity magazines. 74% of non-gun owners do. So that's 5 out of 10. So it's not quite in the super majority. It's that
bump
next stock, group.
Bump stocks?
Well,
that allow a kind of a machine gun, like?
Well, Trump
of course,
was,
the president has already acted on bump stocks.
Right.
Yes.
So the president has already done it. And, I think it's important to point out, as, I just pulled up an article from February 20, 2018, where they discussed that, Trump's been talking about background checks for quite a while. This predates. This was sort of around the time of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School shooting. He said Parkland. The same thing, that he thought background
but
checks.
But then he backed down. Well, and
but,
he's
yes,
gone,
but he said it.
He said it, but he backed down. And he's also gone to the NRA and spoken to them three times in a row.
Yeah.
Sure. They're an election. They are large. I mean, look.
They love
Let's just be frank. I mean, that is a huge, just like teachers unions. Teachers are a large body. People play, you know, the fiddle for teachers. And he's playing the fiddle for a large voting base. I mean, let's be grown up about this.
Hang on. I don't want to equate the teachers in a large armed voting base.
Well, yes.
Jim, we do have a couple of bills in the Georgia legislature. And I on Monday, when I mentioned them briefly, I unfortunately got the authors wrong. One is a bill that was supported by or authored by Democratic Senator Jen Jordan, who wanted to take weapons out of the hands of domestic abusers, people who were
convicted of a misdemeanor domestic abuse.
And she started to make real progress with that bill, but eventually it dissolved. The support for it dissolved.
Right. The need for that bill, the additional need for that bill is there was a kind of a footnoted state court of appeals decision that said Georgia law as written, under Georgia law as written, judges don't have the authority to order the seizure of weapons from spouses in temporary protection orders. So that's quite a big deal.
So that bill could come back in the 2020 session. At the same time, another Democrat, Matthew Wilson, has basically the red flag legislation that we're talking about now on a federal level.
Right, and that has I don't think that has even gotten a hearing.
Yeah. So Caesar, what do you imagine with those measures still alive at the very least? It's a biennial session, so 2020 session, all the bills that were there are still up unless they've been defeated. And what do you think the appetite's going to be for a Republican-dominated legislature to do anything about those measures or any other kind of gun control measure? And by the way, I say gun control, and even Democrats, right, Caesar, don't like gun control. Gun safety is so much more innocuous.
It's something that at least allows you to start the conversation across the spectrum. Are you asking me what I
what do you
think? Or what
do you
I think? Hope?
Well,
what I think is that the legislative session is 4 months away, 5 months away. We'll see if we're still talking about this then. Unfortunately, that's sad. But we'll see if we're still talking about the issue. I think it has the potential of being a significant campaign issue. The question is whether or not Democrats are going to push it.
Right. And I would agree with Caesar here. I would say that whether those issues are taken up in the legislature next year will depend on how worried Georgia Republicans are about their standing in the suburbs.
Yes, but Caesar, you just said you're not certain Democrats are going to push it.
I'm not certain that Republicans.
Oh, you said
it.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
I thought I missed.
It's
okay,
going to depend on whether or not. And so it depends on whether or not Democrats push it.
Democrats are already pushing it. There's a Democrat, Shay Roberts, in House District 52. She's challenging Deborah Silcox again, and she put something out this week. Guns were front and center of her announcement.
So Bob Costa, who is one of the Washington Post's real star reporters, especially since President Trump came into office, was in Atlanta recently. Audrey, he wrote a piece for this morning's Post in which he, and by the way, we'd love to share a link to it with you, but they're behind a paywall, so unless you subscribe to the Post, that link won't take you very far. But Audrey, he wrote a piece saying what we've kind of talked around, but can now dig into a little bit more, the fear that the gun issue could really cost Republicans maybe the 6th and 7th District chances to hold those seats or win those seats, and could really hurt Republicans in legislative races where there are many suburban women, particularly independents, who are really being turned off by what's happening with guns.
Well, you know, one of the things that we've seen in terms of the support for the Republican Party is that there has been a loss of independents. There's been a transition, a loss of women from the Republican Party moving over or becoming less attached to the partisan area. But, you know, I would say, too, the thing that there's been a shift When the two gun events occurred, there was all of that linkage to potentially coordination and these young men who are an important part of Trump's base. I mean, one of the places that we've seen Trump's base grow more than in any other one is young men between the ages of 18 and 25. And if you
young white men?
Young white men, to be exact. And part of their campaign strategy is right now to target the 17-year-olds who are about to turn 18 who are young white men. So couple that with two young white men going out and doing something so devastatingly horrible, and then the 8chan and linking it to white supremacy, that doesn't play well for the president.
Leo,
that's dangerous.
Leo, you've been a political consult. Do you have any candidates in this cycle so far, by the
Not
way?
Not yet.
Okay. So if you were consultant for any of the Republicans in, let's just say, if you were Karen Handel's consultant, if you were Brandon Beach's consultant, two Republican candidates for the 6th District congressional seat running against Lucy McBath, how would you be advising your Republican clients to talk about the gun issue right now?
Focus on science and technology.
What does that mean exactly?
Meaning, let's take as much. It's hard to do when you have situations that are just horrible. Families are hurting. People are afraid to go into Walmarts. These things are very rational fears. However, as a legislator and as academics, people have to start using scientific processes to examine, you know, cause and effect of laws and the outcome
All
of
right,
laws.
But let's...
And then start to study this. And be academic about your pursuit. Take time, study it, start to create outside of any type of lobbying. Be willing to have the emotional maturity to let the lobbying stay in his own room, get in, be academic about this, and figure out what are the best
practices. All right, but what's fascinating about what he just said, Caesar, and Audrey's the one who's got all the data today, but what we've learned about Texas and Ohio, which do have background checks, is basically we have learned that those background checks did nothing to prevent either of the incidents. So there's the science he's talking about. The science, the data would argue against the effectiveness of background checks. That seems to be the case nationwide, that background checks have not prevented these kind of tragic shootings. And yet, there's an emotional attachment to this issue, and more than that, not just emotion, there's a rage among people who are sick and tired of people of this sort of awful violence.
Exactly. And so if you were to ask me if I were advising any candidates who are running in the 7th congressional district, you know, if you got folks like Brenda Lopez who would bring a lot of credibility to this conversation, that it's now because it's now become tied emotionally to this issue of immigration and some of these incredible words that are being used to describe the Latino community and what's happening, words like invasion. And so just, you know, if I'm advising someone in the 7th congressional district, I would make sure I tie a connection between this issue of gun safety and immigration just to show how out of touch and off base the Republican Party is and how much they're not really a part of the future and they're more a part of the past.
And that is, and see, see, that's why I don't have a lot of clients, because that is the emotional fear-based tactic that is currently being used that creates the divisiveness that's going on now.
Exactly.
It wins. Caesar would beat me.
Exactly.
But I think my position would be morally right.
And let me just jump back
sure.
into that. Leo is absolutely right. But I am talking now from the perspective of someone who's seeing what works and what doesn't work.
Right.
Regardless of whether or not, you know, something is intellectually correct or even from a values perspective, fair play, so to speak.
And Caesar, this is what I'm asking the public.
Yeah.
We have to decide as Americans that we want a different type of political process that is less dependent on emotional manipulation. We have to demand it, and we're not. We're allowing political consultants manipulate us into emotional tirades,
right.
That has changed.
So
for instance, the gun control of 1968 was highly debated. I'm looking at a study right here, right now, the discriminatory history of gun control. So if I were to use a fear-based tactic, I would say go to the University of Rhode Island and look at how people have used gun control and mental health connection to hurt African Americans' right. Right to guns.
I got to get to a break. I know you want to jump in.
I'll come back.
I got to take a break. I have no problem with continuing this conversation. I do, Galloway, one thing I do want to ask you to weigh in on before we take the break is that Leo Smith's argument is that we need to downplay the emotional feelings, the emotions that surround this issue. And you know, the emotions are being played on both sides of this thing. One thing you cannot overlook is the massive number of guns that are in play in the United States.
The massive number of guns and in how small a number of hands they actually are.
Yes, right. Yes. All right, let's do this. Caesar and Leo and Audrey, I think they're going to keep talking about this, whether I want to change the subject or not. So let's see if that's true when we come back from this break.
Now is the perfect time to clean out the garage and get rid of that car you no longer need. You'll face the coming months with a fresh start, and by donating your used car to GPB, you'll even get a tax deduction. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
I'm gonna get in my car. Ooh, drive away. Ooh, drive so far.
An American missionary moved to Uganda and opened a center for severely malnourished children, but she had no medical training. When dozens of kids died, people started to ask questions.
We couldn't imagine a human being without skill taking in people that were almost on their deathbeds.
I'm Ari Shapiro. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
It's 4 till 7 today on GPB and online at gpbnews.org.
They want their. Audrey Haynes, she's already begun.
Oh, we never stopped.
While we were still
we
in
never
a break.
Stopped. No.
Okay, I want to, as if we don't have enough to debate, I want to add one element. Tom Faust, right before we walked into the studio to do the show, said to me, "Did you see the Walmart news?" And I said, "You know, I saw a headline. I didn't get to read it." Walmart, Audrey, you're nodding. Walmart, in response to El Paso, has. They have taken action. They have banned the display of violent video game teasers, trailers in their stores.
Yes, and taken down, the cardboard cutouts that may be violent. So your Call of Duty teasers, and those games, actually the display games that you can go and play, they're going to take those down too. So way to go, Walmart.
Kind of astonishing that was where they went.
But they're still going to sell the guns.
Well, apparently. Yeah. I mean, we'll see if there's going to be any action.
Well, there's some controversy there because they've had a number of employees who have begun protesting, within Walmart's confines. And they have some higher-level executives that have some qualms about whether or not Walmart should be selling the guns that they're selling.
All right. Caesar, you really were chomping at the bit there to get in. As we were discussing this whole question of data about what works and what doesn't in terms of gun laws and the emotion, the hunger that people have for something to change. It's the chanting. It's the chanting that President Trump heard, that congressional leaders
that
heard.
Governor DeWine
that
in Ohio heard.
Oh, Governor DeWine got, do something. Do something.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it will be wonderful and ideal if we could be in a world where we would are driven, our actions are driven by, data. And what data means. And so, but that's just not the case, unfortunately.
But it is driven by data because they have the data on who is going to be responsive to these emotional sound bites.
Well, let me put it a different way. Yes, you're absolutely right. But when you're actually articulating the arguments, what's driving it is really these emotion points.
Yes.
And I hate to say it. I think with respect to this issue, it has now been tied to immigration.
Sure.
It was tied to immigration by the actions of this person in El Paso who had a manifesto that talked about Mexicans. And it was tied to the issue of immigration from a policy standpoint by President Trump.
And the synagogue in Pittsburgh.
Yes. And so, when he tied those two together, that was almost like giving the killer in El Paso a high five five and a pat on the back.
Well, I think you were still trying to make your way in. You were probably in the lobby when we pointed out the story that's just moved, and I'll repeat it for our listeners who are joining us late, is that police in El Paso have just confirmed that the shooting suspect, in fact, told them he was targeting Mexicans. He said it specifically when he was arrested and then confessed to the crime, according to reports now from both AP and the Washington Post. Yeah. So it's more than just speculation based on the manifesto. To get out of this part of the conversation, Jim, Audrey had a lot of data. Let me just very quickly say, so did you at the AJC in a January poll. Just a number of months ago, 78% support raising the minimum age in Georgia for purchasing an assault weapon from 18 to 21. 82% oppose allowing gun owners to carry concealed weapons without permits. And that's important because Governor Kemp is an advocate of this.
The entire Republican field for governor in 2018 endorsed that idea. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to watch how this plays out on a legislative level when the 2020 session comes up. It'll be interesting to see whether, in fact, the governor, whether the speaker, whether Republican leaders get more involved in what they decide they want to do, whether, Jim, they think they're going to potentially lose seats if they don't act.
Exactly.
All right. So let's if you're watching CNN, if you're watching Fox, if you're watching MSNBC, choose your poison. You're hearing plenty about the debate that's going on in Washington over whether or not Congress should come back in session, should break its summer recess to come back. Mitch McConnell says absolutely not. Nancy Pelosi has sort of stayed out of the picture. Her body has already passed a background check, and the Senate has so far refused to act on it. So, Audrey, now the president weighs in, and more than once over the last couple of days has said, yes, I believe we do need background checks. We can't allow weapons to get in the wrong hands. I wonder somehow when he uses the language whether he's really talking about background checks or red flag, but we'll find out more. But what's your expectation? And McConnell, too, is saying we need to look at this seriously. Are we really going to see action in Congress? And is the president going to stand by his comments this time?
Well, you know, that's a tough question to answer, because we've seen this happen before. And we know that the president will come out. He's had a roughly kind of bad week in general with a lot of other policy areas. So he needs a win. And he said today that his base gives him more power over the Senate than he's had before. He actually said that today. I'm in more of a position to have influence, and my base wants me to tell them what to do on this issue.
And if I had to guess, first of all, extending background checks to individual sales has always been opposed by the NRA. They continue to raise their voices against that. So I would say that's of the two items on the table, that's probably the least likely. The red flag legislation, the federal red flag legislation, would really just be a series of grants and kind of permission for states to engage it. Right. So there would be another front.
Yeah.
And we have
legislation coming from Lindsey Graham.
And also important, Marco Rubio.
Yes.
In Florida, which is all important in the presidential contest.
Yeah.
I think if Democrats were smart, this Republican president that we have right now is probably the best chance Democrats have on moderating this issue of gun rights and background checks and even having exemptions on HIPAA laws and schools. I think this president is probably more likely than any Republican we've had in a long time.
Caesar, I know you're frowning, but what Leo Smith is suggesting is that it's Nixon going to China. Who could have opened China other than a conservative, well, really a moderate Republican president? That's his case for why Trump has the likelihood of having success when others might fail.
Well, I get Leo's point, but I think from the Democrats' perspective, I think that the perspective of the Democratic Party is we really need to get Trump out. And after he's gone, then we can really push for some sensible gun safety laws. And I don't think there's a lot of confidence, quite frankly. I mean, I heard the words that came out of the president's mouth about being able to have an impact on the Senate, but I just don't think he has a
well,
lot of credibility.
Well, and that, Audrey, is really one of the reasons I think many Republicans, our congressional delegation, for instance, has said very little about this. David Perdue has been asked about it. He said, basically, well, I'm looking at it. Depends on what the language is. I don't think they're quite confident that the president does have their backs on this yet.
No, and they look for cover. But I will say that one of the reasons the Senate is the impediment is because, you know, basically, by the way the Senate is set up, there is overrepresentation of all of those red states that are primarily rural, which is primarily where gun owners, particularly Trump-based gun owners, are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the likelihood, if you were looking at probabilities, the probability of anything getting through is not going to happen unless there's buy-in by the Senate. And there is some bipartisan movement. I know Joe Manchin's one of Trump's favorite Democrats. So maybe. But it could just be a nothing kind of bill that gets passed. It really doesn't do much of anything.
Which could be, in some ways, Jim Galloway, Democrats' worst fear. There's no question that Democrats see the power of running on this issue in the 2020 election cycle. And if they give in to some Republican bill, it robs them of an issue.
Yeah, if Republicans win a fig leaf out of this, then Democrats will be robbed of an issue.
Okay, it's going to be really interesting. The other thing I was thinking, Jim, what do they have another 6 weeks on their summer break? I mean, they still got a lot of time.
It's after Labor Day, right?
Yes. Yeah. So who knows what the heck they're going to be thinking about at that point.
Yeah, part of it is I think we're in, unfortunately, a reactionary environment.
Yeah.
And after recess, and then, of course, you got the election, which will kick into gear next year. I'm concerned about the American people's political stamina. I mean, just the ability to stay in tune with this issue. Yeah. So that's going to be a lot of work on the part of the Democrats to keep this issue going.
All right, let's do this. Let's get our final break of the show out of the way now, because there are a couple of really interesting stories that relate to the Georgia elections that I'd love to get at least a little time on before we're finished today. So you're listening to Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Ross Terrell, GPB's reporter here in Atlanta, but I cover more than the state's largest city. I tell stories about the problems farmers in the southern part of Georgia are facing, and I report on transportation issues affecting the 13 metro Atlanta counties.
We believe express lanes is our way to manage the amount of traffic or demand to give those users the reliable trip times that they're looking for.
Stick with us to hear these stories and more. GPB News, stand with the facts.
Forget Aspen and Tahoe. How about skiing Jupiter's Moon Europa?
It might be kind of icy skiing, a little bit more like East Coast.
I'm Ira Flatto on Science Friday. Take a tour of Jupiter and Saturn and their rings and moons, plus the challenges of bringing high-speed internet to the wide-open spaces of rural Texas. How to bridge the digital divide, all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
3 o'clock this afternoon here on GPB.
Hey, we're packing up pretty soon to take all of our gear out to Augusta, where we're going to be doing the show in front of a live audience, recording it on Monday night. Jim Galloway's packing an overnight bag. I'm sure you're going to stay out there overnight, aren't you?
I got to get back and do the jolt on Tuesday
morning. Oh, yeah, I guess you do. I'm going to drive back after that, too. But my point is, we are going to be in Augusta at the Jesse Norman School of the Arts Monday night, a 7 o'clock show. Jim Galloway will be there. We've got a couple of Republican, Democrat, Democratic legislator from the Augusta area who will be joining us. We have a reporter for one of the local TV stations, Monique Williams. I don't have the whole list in front of me, and I feel bad, but that's all right. That's all right. What we really want, Tom Faust, is to tell people there are probably some seats left. Go to politicalrewind.org and sign up for your tickets, your free tickets there. Senator Harold Jones is going to be there. Mark Newton, state rep, Republican, and Kate Lizotte, Mary Kate Lizotte, professor at Augusta. I'm parroting Faust. He's talking in my ear. Jim Galloway. Right before we went on the air on Wednesday's show, the news broke in the Political Insider at AJC.com that Sarah Riggs Amico's big car hauling business, which is a huge business, had declared bankruptcy, essentially.
They sought Chapter 11 protection.
And I raised the question on that show, having not had a chance to think it through, whether if you're running a company that size, which at one point reported it could have a pension debt of as much as $1 billion.
$2 billion.
How do you find the wherewithal to run a Senate campaign, given what your company is faced with? How do you deal with that in a campaign? And you, just to satisfy my curiosity, wrote a column about it
You were listening to it on Political Rewind on Wednesday. An hour later, I was sitting down with Amico talking to her about it.
So what is can she run for Senate with this thing looming over her?
She is not ruling it out. And it becomes she intends to make it, if she does, she intends to make it part of her campaign biography. Look, this takes us back to the Great Recession, which has really changed the landscape politically. It has really severed that link between financial reputation and political viability. And basically what her situation was, Jack Cooper is, they've got 60 locations across Mexico, U.S. and Canada. They are a union company, which is unusual for Georgia.
Yeah.
All right, and so they've provided health care, they've provided retirement benefits, and they have are part of a multi-employer pension that's going south very, very quickly, and is probably going to crater about sometime in 2025 without some help. And so, and it's, you know, they've only got 3,000 employees. There are something like 1.3 million employees, workers in the United States that are in this situation.
But, you know, I got to say, it sounds like well-intentioned company providing all these benefits for employees. Right. But boy, if I were a Republican running against her, if she were to win the nomination.
Yeah, but look at Sonny Perdue and David Perdue. They had a trucking company.
Yeah.
It went belly up in 2015.
Audrey, how would this play into a Senate race for her?
Well, it fits into a narrative that she can sell as, you know, look, we had a company, we tried to do the right thing, unlike many other companies, and people are concerned about their pensions. They see their future with health care and, you know, do most companies even have pensions anymore? What are they going to do when they live to be 90 years old and they have to retire at 65? How do you support yourself? So she could make that part of her biography and her narrative and a point on which she runs on.
Caesar,
and Republicans will say Democrats want things that they can't sustain.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. Right. That's the argument. You know, look at these giveaways, these big pensions,
this health care plan.
And it's made her company go broke.
There was just a poll that looked at government spending. And guess what? Republicans and Democrats across the board, people were fine with it.
Caesar, have you picked a candidate for Senate, a Democratic candidate, or are you staying neutral because you have to?
Well, I have a favorite. I haven't made any public announcements yet.
So we can't push you on this today?
No, but I will say this. I think if anything, if Amico is thinking about running, I don't think this stops her. I just think this just really gives her the impetus to recraft her narrative.
Yeah,
I think that's all.
All right. Meanwhile, another interesting story, Teresa Tomlinson, the Democrat former mayor of Columbus and a longtime panelist on the show until she announced for Senate, she this week, Jim, said that she was going to support, if she wins her Senate race, she's the nominee, beats David Perdue. One of the things she'll work on is eliminating the filibuster on legislative matters. I just did a quick check of some of the bills that the filibuster that hurt Democratic bills as a result of that. And there were things like the American Jobs Act, which was a thing that President Obama put into place. It would have put a tax on people who have incomes of over $1 million, cap and trade. The DREAM Act was initially defeated by a Republican filibuster. So I get that there are people who think the filibuster is arcane and disruptive. It keeps the Senate from doing anything. But you better be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, what it does, it would take the threshold from 60 votes down to 50 plus one.
And look what it did, Leo, in terms of Supreme Court. Now, it was the Democrats who eliminated the filibuster for federal judges, and look what it did for Democrats in trying to fight Trump's two Supreme Court nominees. So it's a tricky business to try to stand up and say, I think we should eliminate the filibuster. You better make sure you're in the majority once you do that.
Well, but it is getting her attention, and she needs it.
No, and look, I think, Ted Terry, the mayor of Clarkson, who's also in the Democratic primary race, he is not quite there yet. And one of his worries is that it would increase the partisanship in the Senate.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be interesting to watch how that unfolds, Audrey.
Yes, and I will tell you that one of the reasons, outside of the historical reasons the filibuster emerged, the way it has been used is to sort of increase the transaction costs. When something gets passed there, it sticks. And one of the problems we have when we're eroding our institutions of decision making is that now you have decisions that are made and then they are unmade. And then
ACA is a perfect example.
Yeah. But Caesar, look, Teresa Tomlinson is a smart politician. We all know that about her. I'm not suggesting she ought to be the next senator. You may not agree with where she stands on a lot of issues, but it's not like she's naive. So when she takes a position like this, be fascinating to hear what her thinking is behind that.
No,
yes?
No, absolutely. And of course, she doesn't come to this without experience.
Yeah.
She was a very successful mayor of a very important city here in Georgia. And so when she takes a position like this, I think we ought to listen and have a debate about it. I don't think a lot of people are quite there yet, but I think it's a topic to discuss.
What do you think?
What do I think about it?
Yeah.
I like the idea of the transaction costs. I do, honestly. I think you really do have to be willing to put some skin in the game.
And if you're going to change the rules so that you're forcing legislators to make decisions together as opposed to lowering the bar for, a slim majority to make a decision.
All right.
I think it helps you now, but when you're not in a position, it can hurt you very badly.
Well, my point exactly.
Yeah.
We're out of time for today's show. Audrey Haynes, yes, we are. I know you're looking exasperated, but that's the way it goes here at Political Rewind. We get talking, and the clock just speeds up. So, Audrey Haynes, thank you for being back with us. We look forward to having a lot more of you as the fall proceeds. Leo Smith, a pleasure. We didn't get a chance to talk about whether you're still anathema in the Republican Party. Very quickly, are you still getting a lot of hate mail?
I'm getting a lot of very positive stuff about setting a bar to make us all Republican again.
Oh, okay. Caesar Mitchell, thank you so much for fighting your way back from Gwinnett County to be with us. Jim Galloway, I'll see you in Augusta sometime late Monday afternoon as we get set to do our show out there. It ought to be fun.
I'm hoping the Novocaine wears off before I get there.
I thought you already had that.
No, I got another round.
Oh, Jim. Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, I hope so, too.
I'm with you.
All right. We will be in Augusta on Monday evening. We'll air that show on Tuesday. Because we're all hitting the road Monday sometime morning, we're going to do a repeat of a show that aired in May that we looked at and thought was really worth your hearing again. We did a show with John Halpert, the CEO of Grady Hospital, who took us on an in-depth tour of exactly what Grady Hospital is facing in terms of its economic issues, how Medicaid expansion would help the hospital. It's kind of a companion piece to what we did on rural health care at the beginning of this week. So on Monday, join us for the encore of our show with John Halpert, and then we'll be on the air Tuesday with our show from Augusta. I'm Bill Nigut. See you next week.